from the WEEI studios. 93.7 WEEI FM and HD1, Lawrence, Boston. And Odyssey Sports Station.
Even though it was a short off season with the Olympics, and you know, it's crazy to think that we got practice tomorrow. In a sense, like, I missed being around these guys. Last year was so special. We had so much fun playing the right way and playing as a team, and we were so excited for each other's success on the court. Like you said, the three that X hit in game three of the finals, like, I don't know if he played the two games before that, but he got in and he knew what to do, and we all trusted him. So I've missed being around everybody. I missed those moments of, you know, playing at home, practicing, going into somebody else's arena and winning by 25. Like, just the camaraderie that we have, it's special. And when you, like, you've been on teams that it's not like that, and when you have it, you want to cherish it, and that's what we have.
The Afternoon Show with Christian Arcan and Andy Hart starts now on WEEI.
Jason Tatum's pumped up. Everyone's pumped up. A lot of Celtics fans already out here as we are broadcasting to you live from the Big Night Studios next to the Card Vault at TD Garden, right under the escalator next to the entrance into North Station. If you're a content creator looking for a place to record, you can do it right here. Book your time at bignightmedia.com. Also, there are tickets on sale for the watch party at Ticketmaster, and that watch party's taking place right up here at Big Night Live Studio B. You must be 21 or over to attend that. And also, Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce just happen to be recording their podcast upstairs. We'll see if we can direct them in here. Maybe that'd be cool.
Anything is possible.
Paul Pierce. I mean, listen, those guys are my heroes, so it'd be great.
Have to be very, very close to the dump button, basically hovering over it.
I would think so. That podcast every time. So like, I go on Instagram, and I don't know. Like, I'm not a big podcast guy. Like, I listen to a few here and there. I don't listen to a lot of different podcasts.
Whenever
I see a clip of that podcast, I watch the whole thing and I laugh my ass off. They're so funny. It's just the way that anything Kevin Garnett says is funny to me. Like, he just is naturally funny, even when he's not trying to be. And Paul Pierce is just hilarious. And the two of them do a great, great show. And it's being recorded up there right now. And if you ever happen to see any clips of it or whatever, you just take a second, because it's very, very good.
I feel like we'd get high.
What do you mean?
If they came in, I feel like they'd probably bring... Remember when we were across the street for the Bruins opener and there was a certain wafting while we were broadcasting?
It was definitely wafting. Yes,
I feel like there might be some wafting if they walked in.
Hey, maybe. I don't know. I don't know what those dudes are up to.
Oh, we know.
I know what Paul Pierce was up to when he got kicked out off of ESPN.
Oh, yeah. That was a Kayshawn booty call.
Got like four blunts going. His girl's twerking everywhere. Like, that's, yeah, it's probably a little more cool upstairs right now than it is down here.
You think?
As fun as
dorks.
It is. A couple of nerds here talking about the Celtics and, you know, talking to Ross Tucker. But it's probably pretty lit up there, I would say. Anyways.
Don't say lit.
Yeah, that was pretty lame. That being said, the New York Knicks are in town tonight. And the New York Knicks, I think, are the poster children for teams that decided, all right, the Celtics are the new thing. They're the dynasty. They're the team to beat. We have to go out there and put a team together that's going to compete with them. And they spent their offseason doing just that. Most contending teams in the East, I think, had that in mind. But the Knicks were by far the most active and the most bold, I would say. Kind of like how we were talking about the Bruins putting a roster together to try and beat the Panthers.
Yep.
I think it's the same kind of thing here, as these teams are all looking at the Celtics.
Night.
Yeah, opening night.
And the team that put the roster together, we're hoping, doesn't live up to
it. We'll see. We'll see if they have more luck than the Bruins did. Yeah, for sure. Here's what the Knicks did, in case you need a quick refresher. They traded for Karl Anthony Towns. They traded for Mikal Bridges. They extended Jalen Brunson, re-signed Ananobi, re-signed Precious Achiuwa, signed Landry Shamet, and signed Cameron Payne. Now, those last ones were sort of just the fringy kind of things on the end of the bench, but re-signing Ananobi was big money. Brunson was a big money extension. Towns makes a lot of money. Bringing in Bridges, he was the star over there on that Brooklyn team. And is a guy who can take over a game offensively pretty much whenever. This is not only, I think, as bold of an offseason as I think the Knicks have ever had in terms of really bringing in quality players, but they did it all, I think, with the idea of, okay, we need to have a roster, we need to have a starting five and a rotation where everybody can do what the Celtics do, where everyone can switch, everyone can defend, everyone can shoot, everyone sort of, right? Like, that's Karl Anthony Towns. He's a big who can live on the outside. ahead and shoot threes and take Porzingis, if he's playing, obviously, right out of the paint. Mikal Bridges, I know there's a little hitch in his shot right now. Speaking of Jason Tatum, Mikal Bridges' shot's been looking kind of weird lately, but he's a guy who can be a big-time scorer. Jalen Brunson, I think, is an all-NBA quality player, and Ananobi's a great defender. On the wing, Achiuwa's a good defensive big. Like, they loaded up. They've loaded up to try and beat you, Celtics, and let's see what you got for them tonight.
Yeah, they were seemingly built in the mirror of the Celtics, and it makes sense. It's what you got to do. It's like, you know, we argued about this. You know, do the Bruins have to go through the Panthers? Well, there's no rule you have to go through the Panthers to win a cup, but you might have to.
Right.
Do the Knicks have to go through the Celtics? We learned last year. No. In the West kind of all fell apart.
And yeah.
You didn't have to go through what
and
you thought.
And the Knicks
you
were all
through.
Banged up, too. I mean, by the time they got to the Indy.
But my point is they may not have to face the Celtics ever in the postseason.
Right.
Like, the Knicks could win a title without beating the Celtics. Like,
damn,
it is very
Yorkish.
It is very much possible, but they clearly built their team with the intention of being able to compete with the Celtics, and to see it on opening night, I was interested because I went to see our friends at FanDuel for the win totals.
Oh, right.
So the Celtics are 58.5.
Yep.
You like that?
I'd like that over, yeah.
Yeah, I like the over,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I'll take that.
What do you think the Knicks are?
I would say for the Knicks, maybe 54.5.
53.5.
53.
Not bad. Not
okay,
bad.
Then
yes.
I'd go over on that, too. I'd go over on them, too.
But, and they are, I think, I haven't looked at everybody. I think they're next in the East because, like, the Sixers are 49.5. The one I found interesting was Oklahoma City at 57.5.
Yeah.
Right behind the
OKC
Celtics.
Are the darling. I was reading through all the predictions today. The Oklahoma City Thunder, I mean, they are the people. They're a sexy pick right now. People love the OKC.
They had the second
Thunder.
Most wins in the league last year.
I know. And I think that it's. Not a wild one by any means. It's not a wild pick, but I'm surprised there aren't more people sort of looking at the Nuggets, maybe looking at the Wolves. Even though they traded Towns, they still got Edwards. They brought in Julius Randle. Like, I still think there's a lot of talent there in the West. But people,
yeah, that
are
wasn't just a dump.
Very very hot on the Oklahoma City Thunder. The 76ers, who you just mentioned, big offseason for them too. They extend Joel Embiid. They extend Tyrese Maxey. They sign Paul George. They sign Andre Drummond, who I feel like played with him a couple years ago. They signed Eric Gordon, Reggie Jackson. My favorite signing of the entire offseason, the Dancing Bear, Gershon Yabusele, who balled out in the Olympics, and they also re-signed Oubre and re-signed Kyle Lowry. That's another team right there that's looking at the Celtics and saying, hey, if we want to compete with them, we have to load up, we have to retain all our guys, which the Celtics did too. And we
who
also
do they
have
think
to
it is? Gershon Yabusele?
We also have to bring in the guys that can help us. And Paul George, I mean, he's old and often injured, but when he's right, he's a great player. He's a great two-way player who can score and defend and score and defend on the wing. And I think that that's another team that had an offseason with the Celtics in mind and went out there and spent a ton of money and made a ton of moves.
But this is interesting to me, the Paul George part of this. This is his next pairing. Like,
right.
Didn't work with Kawhi, so I'll go try with Embiid.
Kawhi, you want to talk about oft injured.
But at least Kawhi was a winner.
True.
Now he's pairing up with a guy whose track record, resume, reputation is coming up short and not being able to get over the top. Is he going to be the guy that helps put that team over the top? I, for one, will always be dismissive of the Sixers, almost regardless of what their lineup is, just because I feel like they are inherently not competitive with you. Like, they inherently underachieve.
They're like the Jets, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Sixers going to Sixers.
No matter what, they're just
going to
be
they're
like,
going to do what they do. And that's come true for the Jets, right?
Everybody
was like, oh, the Jets got talent. They got Rodgers.
Well, they got a get right game coming up, but yes.
Yeah, but in the long term.
In the long term,
but
I agree.
The Sixers are a team that I absolutely will not respect until they force you to respect them by beating you.
Yeah. And that's really, I mean, those are the main two off seasons that I look at and think, okay, these guys kind of went all out. Cleveland retained a lot of their own guys. They extended Mitchell, Allen, and Mobley. They re-signed Okoro. Didn't really bring in anybody from the outside. Milwaukee didn't do anything. They signed Torian Prince, Gary Trent, and Deion Wright, which I'm sorry. Like, I mean, I know they have a good roster already, but that's not loading up by any means. And even the Pacers re-signed Siakam, re-signed Obi Toppin, extended Nembhard, extended McConnell, and they signed James Wiseman, who stinks. I'm sorry. Like, he's not been anything in the league since he got drafted first overall to Golden State. He's bounced around all over the place, and he's just kind of a jag big man now. And that's it. I mean, really, you know, Orlando had a decent offseason. They extended some of their guys. They're a young team sort of coming into their own, trusting the process. Indiana, I'd say, is kind of trusting the process, too. Miami couldn't swing a big deal. Everybody called Miami, that's the place to be. They extended Adebayo and re-signed Kevin Love, and that's it. They didn't do anything else. So, Miami, I mean, listen, they're a team that can get in the Celtics' head when Butler's playing. playing. But as we saw last year in that first round series, they're pushovers without him. And I'm not even sure how good they are with him at this point either. I mean, he's a guy who's got some miles on those tires, yep, too. So, listen, there's the Sixers, there's the Knicks, and I'm not really even slightly afraid of anybody else. These other teams, they're in the middle of their process. Some of them couldn't swing a deal, and some of them just didn't do anything. I look at that, and I'm still feeling pretty good about the Celtics.
This is part of rivalry. Pretty bad. They always kick our ass.
That's right, Joel. Yeah, I agree. If anything, it would be one of the, as you said, trust the process teams kind of catching it.
Yeah.
Because I was looking. So Milwaukee's a 49.5 at FanDuel.
Okay.
And then Indiana's at 47.5, I believe. And Orlando is right around there, too, 46.5. So they see them as kind of right nipping on the heels of Milwaukee. And it wasn't that long ago that Milwaukee was the talk of the NBA,
yep,
right? You get Dame Lillard and you pair him up with Giannis, and oh my God, they're going to dominate offensively. They can own, both of those guys can control the game.
And both of those guys were hurt in the playoffs, so we may not have seen what they look like at full strength, and all that's true. But, I mean, listen, one thing about the Celtics that you have to admire is outside of Kristaps Porzingis, that is a very, very durable team. They are guys who don't, I know, right? Exactly, knock on wood. But last year in particular, they were not guys that took a lot of time off, guys that they were banged up, they were able to play through it, and I think that paid off in spades once the playoffs started.
And part of it is they're the young core. I mean,
right,
when we're talking about it, we're talking about Brown and Tatum, right?
Yep.
How would you play if you had to miss one of those guys for an extended period of time? Because your Porzingis thing, I actually think this team is good enough to win without Porzingis. I'm not saying it'd be easy, but I think they are potentially good enough, especially if Al Horford can continue to sort of defy Father Time. If he starts to look old and Porzingis is banged up, then I think you start to say, uh-oh, this might be going down a road we don't like. But any of those other teams, I mean, even the Knicks, I'm a big NBA guy in terms of, yeah, let's see in a couple weeks what the Knicks look like. Because I'm always dubious of new pairings, new trios, new super teams, how they fit. Because am I wrong to say more often than not it feels like it under-delivers?
No, I don't think that's wrong
at all. Just law of averages over the last decade, when I see teams that make big moves, big pairings, trios, super teams, more often than not, they under-deliver.
Yeah.
New York? Gotham City?
That's sure, and for them in particular, I mean, they've tried this before. Golden State, when they brought in Durant, that seemed like something, but you know, that was just one guy,
right?
That wasn't they had already had
and
a good team established
already,
right there. Who else? I don't know, the super team, you know,
but
when the
Clippers,
the Miami
didn't,
Heat,
the Suns didn't, the
yeah,
Heat, like most of these.
Well, when the Heat
whatever
first tried, they lost to Dirk that one year, but then they rattled off a few championships.
I think more often than not,
look at the Bucks last year with Lillard,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Milwaukee. Any of these super pairings, duos, and trios, I just, they tend to under-deliver. It's part of why the Celtics have an advantage, because whatever their relationship is, Tatum and Brown have been together forever.
Yep.
Forever. And they know each other in and out, and now they have a championship core roster. They don't have a lot of changes,
and
so
they have the experience of having won finally,
right,
which is you know, for a group like that, pretty valuable.
Now, I do think we are tending to skip past I do think that there's a challenge being the defending champion.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care where the target's on your back or between your eyes. Like, you do have a target, and it is a little different.
But it doesn't matter, because we're all going to be dead someday.
And he's right. And he's right. Hopefully, you know, we can push that off for a while. But
hopefully.
I also think the Celtics, they got a lot of teams' best efforts for a while now.
True. Because
they have been a high-end team, especially in the East. And I do think that's why, for a while, at times, they went through some of those bad losses to young, developing teams that did out-effort them on any given night every once in a while. And now it's going to be everybody. But no, I'll take the Celtics over Knicks, over any new super team pairing until that pairing or trio proves they can play.
617.
Right in our forehead, in between our eyes. I hope I can
right
see
there
the red dot.
We'll be able to see it. 617-779.
I don't want to see the dot.
793-7. There's your phone number. Very, very uplifting message there from Andy Hart and Joe Mazzulla.
Just
Mr. Sunshine there. Joe Mazzulla, who we'll get into next. He was the topic of a question this morning on the Greg Hill Show that was answered by Wick Grosbeck. We'll talk about Mazzulla, his style, the analytics that go into it, and we're going to make our predictions for the upcoming season, 2024-25 NBA predictions, coming your way right after Brian Frazoco tells you what's trending. playing all your favorite love songs back to back to back, and that was also Joe Mazzulla.
This is exactly how the Celtics practice went.
It was right. This is they have this blasting through the Auerbach Center. That was Wick Grosbeck, not Joe Mazzulla, but he was talking about Joe Mazzulla and why the style works. And listen, it's worked so far. And credit to Joe Mazzulla, really, because this whole thing, his whole hiring, and him taking over as head coach. Could have gone horribly wrong. Like that was a thing. Like Ime Udoka, whatever you think about, the things that happened there. And listen, we never really got the full story except for in that long expose in the Guardian, which that was really the only thing that jumped into the details of what happened there. And obviously, he didn't behave in a professional manner. But whatever you thought about that, he was a coach that got this team's attention. He was a coach that this team played really, really hard for. And in his first year, he took him farther than Brad Stevens ever did. And maybe that was just the natural progression of the way things were going. But I don't think so. I don't think so at all. You heard them talk and speak glowingly about him while he was there, as the thing was happening that got him fired, and then after he was fired and over on another team, and there was the year before that where he was just, hanging in the ether, but there was glowing remarks from guys still on this team, guys like Marcus Smart who aren't on the team anymore. He was a guy who commanded that room and commanded that sort of respect. And what do they end up doing to replace him? They grab some guy out of the second row who just happens to be this kind of crazy dude who's laser focused and just doesn't smile and doesn't have time for anything that's not basketball or the Lord. I mean, that's really the only two things he ever talks about. And that worked perfectly. I mean, really, it did. He stepped right in there after kind of a what the hell is going on here type of first season. And by the second year, he had that thing running. He had that thing humming. And, part of it was that he gets to coach all these great players and he has this great starting five. And I'm not overlooking that. But I do think that in a lot of ways, Joe Mazzulla ended up being a great, great choice to be the head coach of this group.
Yeah, I don't know if it was fortunate, I guess. Would be the word. Like, I think they were kind of backed into a corner and they picked the best possible, what they thought was the best possible option, probably not really knowing if it was going to be a good enough option.
Right.
I think we were all dubious. He was thrown into it, and maybe that was part of it. Maybe that made it easier in a way, just thrown into it and like, you better start swimming or you're going to drown here.
Yeah.
And he did it. I do wonder the shelf life of his style. I wonder that.
I kind of wonder that too. I mean, it's so weird. Like he's so off-putting.
It's cool and it's different, and maybe it's even beneficial to the team and stress relief.
I think it
definitely
is.
That.
Yeah.
But then is there at some point where it's like eye rolling? And
there's some good jokes though.
It turns a corner, and I don't know.
If they lose.
Yeah, I kind of think it is.
Right?
It is if they lose.
If they lose, everybody's going to be like, all right, that was funny at first, but okay, enough.
Right. Especially if they lose because they're missing their threes or they're doing things that are sort of directly tied into his philosophies of basketball and the way he thinks the game should be played. But then the flip side of that is maybe it just works. Maybe his attitude and strange makeup and view of life and the world around him, maybe it works.
Yeah, and not so much even that, but just his philosophy on basketball, right? I mean, like, shoot a million threes, tough defense, having a rotation of guys who can switch and defend on all the pick and rolls that the other teams run, like, all of that stuff. And that's not, novel or anything.
I mean, a lot of teams are trying to do that.
It's not, but I do think that in terms of... They led the league in three-pointers attempted last year, right? I mean, and I think they led it by a lot. They were the top defensive team in defensive rating. Their offensive rating was also really high with all the shooting. I think they were third in defensive rating last year. But that's really what it comes down to. I mean, they preached a lot of that, and they preached it with Udoka, too. The defense was a big part of why that team was so good, with Robert Williams and Brogdon and Smart was still there. And that was a huge part of it. They were able to maintain that by bringing in guys like White, bringing in someone like Drew Holiday, who's just such a great lockdown defender. Those two guys are about as tough of a duo defensively as there is in the league with guards. And really, the entire roster, it's just you have bulldogs all throughout it who can defend not 1 through 5, but 2 through 4, and in some cases 1 through 5. So that's really a big part of it. And I think Mazzulla in his style, for a team that preaches defense, I think it really works. I do. I just think that's all mentality. That's all, getting in there and showing them that you're not going to tire down and that you're going to defend them and be on their hip
We're
the
all
entire game.
Someone's eyes.
right? Like that's, but, and I think his philosophy and his behavior is conducive to
that. But the defensive aspect of it came and evolved over the last year plus. Because if you remember, that was, remember, wasn't it Jaylen Brown who was breaking team huddle saying defense when other people weren't? Like they were saying team and he was saying defense, or they were saying something.
Yeah, when was that?
That was like a year plus ago.
Okay.
At the end of the previous season. But like that was that thing, is he preaching defense, but is he fully invested in it? Like, does he really? And then I feel like they did turn a corner. And I think part of that was the makeup of the team. I think the arrival of Drew Holiday played a factor in that, sort of reinvigorating the focus on the defensive end of the floor. Part of it, I do think, is Jaylen Brown deciding, I'm going to be a great defender. I'm going to defend the entire floor and take pride in that and use that to maybe selfishly grow his game. Like, I don't discount that fact where he says to himself, well, this is going to be Jason Tatum's team. He's going to take the last shot. He's going to be the scorer on the Boston Celtics. Well, why don't I just become the better all-around player? And why don't I play defense? And people will take note of my athleticism on the defensive end of the floor. And
he was the one who wanted Luka Doncic in the finals.
Oh, absolutely.
He wanted to guard him.
And he played it up. And I don't discount the fact that when they know when they're mic'd up, and they know if he wants the ball, he's going to have to bring it down, because if he passes it, he's not getting it back, and the whole thing. I believe he played up that mentality to help his reputation and sort of the aura around him. So I think he benefited from it, but I think he did it intentionally. But I do think Jaylen Brown was helpful in supporting the defensive philosophy and making that a core tenet with the Boston Celtics as they are built and as they went on to win a title. I think Jaylen Brown was a key factor in that.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think that it was, you know, something everybody had to buy into. I don't think anybody was like, I don't want to play defense. But yeah, he was a big part of it, and I think he ended up being and emerging as one of the better defenders, even if he didn't get recognized for it on the all-defense
team.
But
Stephen A. said he should have, and he told
Stephen
him
a
that, and
that.
I'll tell you that right now.
But you also had guys who were all-defense, you know? Like, there are guys on this team who were actually were all defense, and I think that's just sort of a spoiler, embarrassment of riches, if you will, when it comes to that stuff. All right, let's get to it right now. We are live here from the Garden, and it is time to make some predictions. All right, we'll start with our coach of the year. Who do you think, Andy Hart, will be the NBA coach of the year?
I just want to let you know that Terp helped me put these together. I was like running by my Celtics NBA expert to make sure everything. Joe Mazzulla.
I think
the Celtics are going to roll. I think the Celtics could put up historic numbers. I actually think that 58.5 is a little low. I saw the Athletic prediction of 56 wins or 57. I think this team is pursuing high 60s type wins, and if everything goes right, I think they are pursuing record-setting type season. And if you do that, I know a lot of times it's the team that turns around and, like, I don't know, Ime Udoka or somebody could be in the running. But I'm going with the best coach on the best team. I'm going to use that. You know how they say Tatum MVP?
Yes.
He's the best player on the best team. How about the best coach on the best team?
I agree that it should be him, but I don't think it's going to be. I think Mark Dagnall is going to repeat in Oklahoma City, just because they're still the Thunder and you're still the Celtics. And even though we won it last year, people are going to look at that team as overachievers and say, you know, for the team to slap together out there in OKC, that coach is really doing something special. It's not going to be right.
Slap together.
Yeah.
Didn't they have 700 first-round picks?
Yes, they did. And they slapped
and
them all together.
Didn't they win? Didn't Brian just chime in to tell us they had the second most wins in the NBA last year?
57.
So why is he getting it over my guy Mazzulla?
Because I'm telling you what the perception is. The perception of the Oklahoma City Thunder is that maybe it is. I'm telling you. This is what I think. We can put some actual odds on this. Neither of them win. I guess neither of us matter. But
on a lot of sports books, did you see who the favorite was to win Coach of the Year?
I did not.
Ime Udoka at plus 900.
Yeah, Ime Udoka on a bad
team.
That makes
sense.
I can see that, yeah.
I don't think that's a very good team. They get an injection of some youth. I think he's a great coach. I really do. Whatever you think of the other stuff, I don't, whatever. But
I mean, the other stuff wasn't great, but he is a good coach. Let's go to our sixth man of the year. Who do you think will be the sixth man of the year, Andy Hart?
Did you notice when Wick Grosbeck was talking about the Boston Celtics today, he said three names in order.
Mm-hmm.
The first two were obvious.
Yep.
If you talk about the Celtics, you say in some order, Tatum and Brown, Brown or Tatum. Is the third name often Peyton Pritchard?
It is often not Peyton Pritchard.
On the tip of the tongue of the, for now, owner of the Boston Celtics?
From the outgoing owner, yes.
Outgoing owner. Peyton Pritchard, he hits half-court shots. Everybody loves him. He injects some life into the second unit. Peyton Pritchard, sixth man of the year.
All right. I like that pick. I think it's a good pick. I think it's going to be Naz Reid, though, of the Minnesota Timberwolves, because he is the guy that I think. Was he last year? Did he get it last year, too? Am I just picking all repeats? I might be. But I was looking at it, and I was looking at some of the odds.
Yeah, he won it last year.
Did he win it last year? All right, I think he repeats,
too. But you cut and paste your list from last year?
Apparently, I did. I didn't realize that. Rookie of the year. Can't cut and paste that one. Who's your rookie of the year, Andy?
Reed Shepard, the kid on Houston.
Mm-hmm.
He put up a lot of points.
Kentucky, the shooter, right?
Yeah. In the summer league, he shot like 50-something percent, put up a boatload of points. A bad team with a good young player usually means he gets to score a lot. When you put up numbers and scoring, you can win the rookie of the year.
That's true. I went with Zach Edey on the Grizzlies. He had a great summer league.
Chalk.
And I think that he is going to be the rookie of the year. There's Donovan Klingon's another one. I think he has a good chance at it, too. I'm not really high on those French guys that went 1-2.
In terms of coverage, Bronny James will get it if they voted on
Bronny
coverage.
Bronny James, the rookie of the year.
That's
a dark horse.
We're not doing that.
Put a dollar on that one. You can win. You can pay your mortgage if he ends up winning.
This is the one I went away from the Celtics for. What's his name? Schlellenberger or whatever?
Shireman.
Shireman, there you go.
Shireman.
Defensive player of the year.
13th on the roster. How are you going to win rookie of the year?
It's going to be tough. DPOY?
Derek White.
Wow.
Yeah. What do you got a problem with that?
No, I don't.
I wanted to say Drew Holiday, but Terp talked me out of it.
He said go Holiday over. He said go White over Holiday.
He thinks Drew Holiday won't get the 65 games required.
Oh. I guess that could certainly happen. I think Derek White's shot blocking ability is something that's going to have him stand out again if he's able to do that again this year. If you bet on Derek White getting over a half a block, you made money almost every single game last year, and that's what it was capped up at. Three-pointers, too. He's right up there. I'm going to go with Wembanyama because I think it's just he's going to rack up all sorts of stats, block shots, et cetera, and I feel like that's usually the way the voters
also
go.
Also Buzz.
Buzz, too. Yeah.
That award, as much as any, I feel like Buzz matters.
They don't want to give it to Gobert again. I know that.
Right. Like, they always try to. Yeah. But also, it feels like was Marcus Smart really the best player in basketball, defensive player in basketball?
Probably not.
It just became the narrative.
They always give it to bigs, so I was happy that they gave it to a guard.
Right.
They rarely ever give it to guards.
I just feel like once the media latches on to a narrative, it grows and grows and grows. Like Stephon Gilmore. Cornerback hasn't won it in a quarter of a century, and he's having a good year. Give it to Stephon Gilmore.
Okay. Who's your MVP?
My MVP.
I think I know who it is.
Is
based
number,
on your other picks.
Number one in your heart, number seven in your program. I've seen lots of jerseys walking by here. Jaylen Brown.
MVP of the league. He's going to be the MVP of the league.
That's why I brought up maybe egos could become an issue again, because if that happens, egos might become an issue.
I would think. If he's the MVP of the conference
finals. The only MVP's missing.
The NBA finals and then the league before Jason Tatum, that would certainly be something. I'm going to go with Luka. I feel like it's his turn. It does seem like there's a lot of politics at play when it comes to the MVP.
Yep.
You know, it's your turn. All right, well, you can't give it to Jokic 3 years in a row, so we'll give it to Embiid. It's his turn. Luka hasn't won one yet, so I feel like it's going to be his turn. And Tatum still a little ways away, and I think being on this super team is going to hurt his MVP chances, even if he does put up the numbers. All right, finally, who is going to be in the finals and who's going to win?
So I have the finals, and this is where I kind of join you for the chalk parade. I think it's Celtics, OKC, the two teams with the highest win totals, and I think the Celtics win it. I think the Celtics are starting a multi-banner run here, and I don't see anything other than those injuries that you brought up so negatively to start the show derailing them.
I didn't think I brought that up to
it's negative.
To start the show.
Tonight is a celebration. In the first segment, you were talking about injuries.
I don't think I was. Anyways, I'm going with the Celtics as well over the Nuggets. I think the Nuggets bounce back this year. I think that they have a better playoff run than they had last season. I don't necessarily think the offseason additions of Russell Westbrook's going to do anything for that, but I don't know. I believe in them. I think when they're at their peak, they're the best team in the Western Conference. I think they'll give the Celtics a series, too, because you'll remember last year, Celtics lost to them twice and were the only team that they had any sort of, and that the fans here had any sort of fear of, was those Denver Nuggets. I still think Jokic is the man. I really like Jamal Murray. I think that they have a good, solid roster inside and out. It's not as good as the Celtics, but it's good enough, I think, to compete with them in a series and good enough to get out of the West, even with all that extra talent that you mentioned on OKC. Minnesota's still good. There's a lot of talent in the West, but I still like the Nuggets. There you go. Those are our predictions for the upcoming season. If you like them, if you don't like them, let us know. 617-779-7937. There's your phone number. We'll get to your phone calls. And when we come back, Jaylen Brown. face-to-face. MVP Jalen Brown is face-to-face with Stephen A. Smith wearing a State Your Source t-shirt, which I know a lot of people liked. We'll get to that. And do you agree with Jalen and the things that he said when going over why that bothered him so much? We'll get to all of that with your phone calls right after this.
This is Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI.
Save us as a favorite on the Odyssey app. And take Boston Sports Original everywhere you go.
A couple months back, on your platform, you recited an unnamed source who I feel like attacked my character. One, I didn't really get a chance to defend myself. And two, you know, the damage kind of already is done. And I think journalistic integrity goes two ways.
Yes, sir.
So for me, I think a lot of people were upset, and as was I, because I understand journalistic integrity, and I understand how that works, but I also understand the idea of normal integrity as well, and I also want to maintain and protect that.
Sure.
One thing you can say about Jalen Brown is he'll tell it to your face. And he wore that shirt that said State Your Source, and it was in reference to something that Stephen A. Smith said about a conversation that he had with a source who he never named, but the source said that Jalen Brown is not well-liked in the league and that he's not considered marketable. Now, there's a lot of different ways you could go with that. I don't think it was someone on his team. I don't think it was like a player on the team or something. It could have been maybe, I don't know, a Nike executive, right? I mean, it's very possible that it was someone like that. Well, who talks about being marketable? Who cares about that sort of stuff? Executives from shoe companies and things like that, athletic companies, things like people who hand out sponsorships to guys like Jalen Brown. And in fairness, Jalen Brown did come out with his own line of shoe this year. He has a whole thing with Nike now, with which stems back now all the way to Team USA and sort of beyond that. I think that in general, he's like everybody else on this team, very aware of what people say. I mean, he's very antennas up about it. He cares when someone says something like that. He said, I didn't have a chance to defend myself. And, you know, journalistic integrity goes both ways. And in fairness, here's Stephen A. interviewing him and allowing him to defend himself and say what he wants to say. But in a situation like that, when you're talking about a team that's competing for an NBA Finals and may or may not have sort of a, I don't know exactly what to call it, but a you-know-what measuring contest going on between the two best players on the team. Something like that, I think, is fair game. I didn't think it was an unfair thing for Stephen A. Smith to have reported, in the sense that he's right. I'd say Brown is right about there being unnamed sources who can sink people's careers. It's true. I mean, that's just sort of an unfortunate reality of modern sports and the NBA and sort of the influence that people have and the people like Stephen A. Smith have. But that's nothing new. I mean, that's nothing new to or unique to Jalen Brown and the Celtics. That's just something that's kind of always existed, I guess. So I understand what Brown's saying, but I don't think it's something super special or unique to him.
No, but I think what... And I listened to like 80% of the podcast. It was like an hour and 40.
It's very long.
Yeah, it was a lot. And a lot of it had to do with this. It was sort of deep philosophical stuff and how he approaches everything. But I give Jalen Brown credit. He kind of led the podcast.
Yep.
As soon as he was introduced, he took over and basically said, I want to talk about this. I want to address it now. Let's get it out of the way. And I think what bothered him was... This isn't somebody saying, a source said that he struggles to dribble to his left, or this was sort of an attack on his character, right? That he doesn't get along with people. He's not likable.
Right.
And that is where I think he feels like it crossed the line. Because if there's a source that says, he's got a sprained ankle or whatever, like those are kind of... Whatever. Is it right? Is it wrong? Is it a grade 3 MCL or a grade 2? And the source was wrong. Whatever.
Right.
This was, and I didn't remember the details of this. This came about very quickly, I guess, on air. Stephen A. Smith got the text while on air having a discussion. And then he claims he got multiple phone calls when they went off air, kind of backing it up. So he kind of, in a weird way, even though he had already said it, kind of got multiple sources to corroborate the idea.
Sure.
But it's also just an opinion. It's also just an idea. But when you marry it up with Jalen Brown doesn't have a sneaker company and he doesn't have a boatload of endorsements and different things, now it's like, oh, maybe circumstantially that proves the point that he is difficult to work with or marketability is a concern for him. So,
and I think part of that had to do with... with the whole thing with Kyrie and sort of that thing with the Black Hebrew Israelites outside the Barclays Center and all that. Like, there was some things. He got involved with Kanye West. Like, there was things that you sort of looked at. He signed with, what was it, Donda Sports?
Yep.
And you're just looking at it like, you know, this is stuff that makes you tougher to market, you know? Like,
sure.
We weren't seeing Kyrie doing a bunch of ads after that. Like, that's part of it. Now, that was a while ago. It's a few years now, and I do think that people move on and sort of forget. And I do think that Jaylen Brown also does a lot of things that are really easy to market. I mean, he does a ton of work in the community. He's got his own businesses. He wants to do all this stuff to sort of uplift the various communities around the country. In Oakland with the Black Wall Street thing, like, he's very active in all of those types of spaces. That should be easy to market, I think, especially now that he's won a championship and was the conference final MVP and the finals MVP. Like, those are all things that push you into that next
but
level
complex.
Of marketability. He is complex.
I think
that's
true. The problem. He's complex. Like, you say that, and this is a third rail, but the reality is he does want Black Wall Street and the wage gap and the wealth gap and all of those things. Aren't there some people that's probably, they don't care for it? They're called racists, right?
Sure.
You know what I mean? So if you, it's the old Michael Jordan thing, Republicans,
but,
whatever, that.
LeBron James had the I Can't Breathe shirts, and that didn't hurt
no,
his
I know,
endorsement.
But,
so, I mean, you
but
know,
he's LeBron James.
Right. I'm just saying, I don't
Jaylen
think
Brown's
that's
the second best player on his team.
That's not a deal breaker, though.
It could be.
You
have enough of those.
Enough racists that are NBA fan. I don't know.
No, I think companies look at that like, if I bring this guy aboard, what are the cons? And you start
Nike
listing,
bring Kaepernick
and if
again?
There's
like, you know, like that, I don't
and they,
know about
they
this.
Went pros over cons there. They believed, but they had the discussion because it was a flexion point, right? Like, there was a lot going on then. And the one thing that I always said is, how many guys who are the second best player on their team, and that's been widely accepted, whether I believe it or not doesn't matter. That's been widely accepted. He's the second best player on the Boston Celtics.
Right.
Usually the star gets the superstar treatment, right? Like, Jason Tatum's
absolutely
the star, so he's going to get more marketable opportunities, blah, blah, blah.
And he's gotten lots of them. I mean, he was in every Gatorade commercial.
Right.
Like, he's
also
a lot
very
of stuff.
Vanilla.
Yeah,
how many ads did you see Klay Thompson do, even when they were winning titles? Like, he was never on
right.
TV.
Like, and that's the reality. Once one guy is sort of anointed the king, is anointed the go-to guy, the superstar, mm-hmm. the marketable one, the A, the alpha, the whatever you want to call it, that there's less available for the beta, for the second tier, second fiddle. And that's what Jaylen Brown has been. And then you add in some of these other, would that be an issue if we brought him in? Would that cause any backlash? Especially now. Now, I know we're in a weird time here, but, you know, the Bud Light things and these various,
yeah,
these social media campaigns can just erupt and take off and do damage to companies. So I get it. I like him, and I like, he's not for me. I'm too lazy to approach life the way he does.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, he pushed back, but the disruptor thing, like, he's a bit of a disruptor. He's a why guy. He's definitely a why guy.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody tells him to do something, he says, why? Well, they did it before you. Why? He probably keeps asking why, whereas I just go, oh, okay. And I just put my head down. And like, I'm an idiot. I'm a lemming. I just go along with, I'm a cow.
Uh-huh.
You know, the trough is over there. All the other cows are going over there. So I follow them to the frickin' trough.
Gotcha.
But he's not that. And I think that rubs some people the wrong way. And those are these people. Also, it could be a Nike exec but it could also be just somebody in the agent world who knows it and is like, I can tell you, I don't represent him, but I can tell you, people have questions about his marketability, his likability, right? Like, I've heard stories, and they're passing that information on. And
yeah.
It's their truth. They believe it. I don't think people were making stuff up. I don't think this was a blackball
I don't think
campaign.
So either. I don't think that Stephen A. made it, that he didn't have a source, or that, you know,
or even
a source that he'd be able to, right, exactly. I think that was all true, right.
Like,
yeah.
That source believes that Jaylen Brown, there are people that don't like him, and that he has trouble being marketed. I firmly believe that was an honest take. Now, is that the truth? Well, that's their truth. Doesn't mean it's everybody's truth. And Jaylen Brown, you're attacking my character. I have no problem with him being upset about that. And now he goes on today, or this week, clears the air. They ended up kind of yucking it up for a lot of the podcast.
It was not very combative. It was pretty friendly, I thought. Yeah.
So I think he got what he wanted. Stephen A. gets what he wanted. And everybody moves on.
Yep, that's what it looked like. 617-779-7937. There's your phone number if you'd like to jump in. It is opening night here for your Boston Celtics, and we'll take your Celtics phone calls. And when we come back, there's been some more talk about Jerod Mayo being on the hot seat here. Kraft's decision-making now coming into pure focus. And Mike Florio had something to say on his podcast yesterday that has gotten a lot of people talking. We'll get to all of that next.